This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
When the nights get cold and the lights go out, the sun is gone behind the clouds, and you feel lost, and I'll reach out to guide you home with my lighthouse. Oh, whoa, oh, whoa.
Welcome to Lighthouse of Hope. I'm your host, Michael Hempseed. I'm so glad you're joining us today. On today's show, we have Nats Levi. Nats, welcome to the show.
Hello, Michael. It's really good to be here.
Fantastic. And can you tell us a little bit about yourself, please?
Let's start with the obvious. I'm very tall, although you can't see me, you can only hear me. 6'2", female who's been involved in the fitness industry for about 20 years now. But it's not how I started. I started as a high school teacher and a very, very gumby person who always used same arm, same leg.
Right, I see. So a sports teacher?
No, not at all. Science and biology. A little bit of health on the side. So, yeah, I love science.
Oh, fantastic. And can you tell us a little bit about your career in the sporting industry, please?
So in terms of fitness, my career started with teaching movement to music with a big global company called Les Mills. And that's pre-choreographed classes of various programs, whether it's a strength or a cardio-based one, where you teach like participants that are in the room for the clubs that offer the programs. And for that, I probably started very, very small. I just loved it so much. I started in a very small gym and convinced them to bring the programs on board. And that was a very small resort gym in Hamilton Island in the beautiful Whitsunday. And from there, I just kind of pursued my passion and was lucky enough to be able to travel the world with my husband, teaching the classes. And then when we finally settled back in New Zealand, I just thought, wow, I really need to go for it. I'm here in Auckland, New Zealand, where Les Mills is made and where it's based. So I put my heart into working for the gym and getting some classes there, and I did. And from there, just really established myself in terms of the personal training space, and then worked really hard and through the company become personal training manager. That's opened up a whole realm of opportunities for me. And now I'm doing my own business, Nats Levi Challenge, Nats Levi Fitness, where I offer health-based challenges, retreats, and a movement on-demand platform through Facebook.
Great. And we'll come to, you've obviously had a few challenges along the way, but first of all, can you tell us about some of the highlights, maybe working for Les Mills and some of those things along the way?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, I think even to get a class in Les Mills gym was a huge highlight for me, because it's kind of like the pinnacle of where you want to be teaching. I mean, the training and the structure, and the accolades that you get from having a class in a Les Mills gym in Auckland is incredible. So that was definitely a huge accolade for me. And within the Les Mills realm of group fitness, I've been lucky enough to be on the national squad. We have national squads for our group fitness in different countries. So I did that for a couple of years, where in that you get to kind of teach master classes to fellow instructors who travel in for release day, is what we call it, when you're releasing new choreography every 3 months. And then I was very lucky to be selected to be part of the Body by rebranding team, which meant that I got to film what we call master classes, which are distributed worldwide to other instructors and people that offer the programs around the world. And I did that with a lovely lady whose name's Susan Trainer, and that was an incredible feat for me. And with that, I got to travel to countries that I probably never would have gone to before, like Sweden, and do these wonderful huge big presentations of the class. And yeah, really epic.
So it sounds like you had some amazing times along the way. And some people would think if you achieved all that, that would mean that your life was perfect and there'd never be any problems. Was that always the case?
Absolutely not. I think what people like, you know, we always like to talk about the positive and boost ourselves up, and definitely those are very positive times for me. But I guess behind the scenes, from that, there was a lot of pressure and expectation, not just in my class space, but in the fitness space, that was put on me by other people and also put on me by myself to look a certain way and perform a certain way. So I was working very, very hard and following all these set rules that were given to me or advice that was offered to me. And I ended up actually burning my hormonal system to the ground, I guess you can say, and I ended up with a condition known as female athlete's triad, where my hormonal system was absolute chaos, and I was pretty grumpy for a while. And when that really took full effect, you know, there's the aesthetic, I guess you look a bit differently when your hormones are trying to sort themselves out, which was also very, very hard in terms of my identity, being a fitness instructor, being a personal trainer, being supposed to be like the picture of health and fitness, and with that comes certain ways you're supposed to look. And when you don't look that way and you still have to teach and do your regular life, there's like almost an internal crisis, which is really, really hard mentally. You sort of start to question your identity and who you are and have these horrible conversations within your head.
And we'll come back to that in just a moment, but when you thought about professional athletes and people in the personal training space, were you aware of how much of a personal toll this might take on some people?
Absolutely not. I think, I know my reason is my reason alone for getting into the industry, but I just really loved movement and I loved the way that that could empower people, and I could see their sheer joy when they were moving and they kind of lost themselves in that space, or they saw some achievements physically of what they could do that they didn't think they could do. So that's what really attracted me to the industry. And they, you know, you're always kind of looking at the shiny side. I don't think I ever realised a bit of the dark side that is in the health and fitness industry. But once you experience it, you can't unsee it. And then you, I guess, you know, it's like when you want a red mini, all you see driving around is red minis. Once you kind of experience a bit of the dark side and maybe some of the untruths that exist in the fitness industry, you can't help but see everything. And it was definitely not something that I realised getting into it. I think I was quite naive as well, and that's just the way I rock around life. Like, I always like, just not expect, but I always like to anticipate the best from people and the best from things and all that goodness and kindness. And I don't like to live in the dark side much. I don't operate very well from that. So I just never kind of look out for it. And I'm sure it's always been there. It's just that my curtains were down to all that existed.
You said before that this had quite a significant impact on your self-identity and self-esteem. Can you tell us a little bit more about that, please?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, the cool thing about my career is when you get known for a certain thing. So for me, it's a 6'2" athlete, you know, always looking quite lean. I'm not, like, definitely a small girl. I'm very statuesque, I guess you could say, but always quite muscular and fit looking, and to lose that, and when I was in the midst of my hormonal chaos, things like I guess like a stress belly, like a pot belly, would develop, and that I couldn't control. Like, I would not breathe or be very stressed out from pressure that I'd put on myself, or expected pressure that I kind of felt, and my stomach would almost balloon out. And then, you know, my body started to look very differently from how people had kind of known to expect Matt Levy, who's taking the class, I guess. Like, it didn't look like the fit athletes that I guess they'd been used to. And that was quite hard. And not only with that, when my hormones were offline, it was quite hard for me to think clearly. And one thing that I've always valued about myself is my ability to think and my brain, and how creative and how fired up it can be. And so I had to kind of have, I guess, brain fog, and to feel this sense of misery all the time and not have this genuine sense of joy. And then combined with my body looking very differently and feeling sore when I was moving, like feeling my joints and not feeling so springy, not being able to leap out of bed or even let alone jump across the room, really made me question myself and who I was and what I was doing in life. And I felt like I was a little bit of a, I like to kind of describe it like I was in this massive hole. And, you know, like I could kind of see, well, at first I couldn't really see the light at the top of the hole. Like, I was just so deep and dark in it, and I was kind of like trying to claw up the sides of it, but it was kind of like the slippery mud where I just kept falling back down, and I felt like it was sucking me in. yeah, it really made me question myself, who I was, and I lost myself a bit.
And sometimes we say to professional athletes that if you want to succeed in this game, you know, you need to get up at 5 a.m. You need to really push yourself. What do you think about that advice in terms of what you've just told us?
Absolutely. Well, you know, success does not come easy. There's always hard work attributed with it. No matter the athlete, there's always a level of repetition or skill set that's being worked on. You know, you've got to be disciplined. You've got to have that work ethic as well. Like, talent can only take you so far. And I kind of came from the space where I probably didn't have much natural talent. I was quite gumby, so I had to work really, really hard. So I do think that that applies. But I think, like, in terms of my space, because in health and fitness, we're not really in a team where you're exposed to, you're not programmed or cared for, or have that physio on tap. Like, you really are a contractor trying to make your own money, so you take on the classes to make the money. You're doing all this extra training to better yourself and improve yourself so that you can succeed. You're working on what you need to, and that's all at your own expense. So I guess, you know, there has to be a certain amount of hard work, but I also think that that needs to be monitored, and that needs to, you know, like we do with our clients, if in a personal training space, we need to periodize and program properly and look after things like energy in, the nourishment side of things, as much as the how much expenditure there is on energy and what's going out of the body to keep that athlete happy and healthy, especially if we want not just the athletic performance success, but we want them to be happy in life.
And you mentioned that a lot of things started to go wrong. Did you pick this up in yourself, or was it other people around you that noticed this?
I think when I was in the midst of it, I just was a bit blunt. Like, I was just in a tunnel. Like, I was working so hard, I didn't really realise maybe how tunnel visioned I'd become, or maybe how grumpy I was. I just kind of started to notice when things started to spiral out of my control, because I came from a space, I guess, where, you know, I know if I manipulate my activity, or if I manipulate my energy in, then I can get a result. So I think when I started to not be able to control those levers in my life and not get the result that I expected, and then combine that with, I was quite stressed out. Like, I was operating at a very high level of stress, but because I think I was saturated in it, I didn't really see it. It was definitely the people close to me that probably noticed. They were like, wow, you really need to breathe. Or my focus was just so intent on success and on this one aspect of my life. But then, you know, like, the people closest to you, I don't know about you, but like, I hear them every day, I see them every day. Like, when they say things, you don't really pay attention. It's not until they kind of sit you down and have that hard word with you that you're like, oh, you know, you kind of stop and take a breath.
Yeah.
And I think that was my situation. Like, I definitely have a lot of loved ones close to me that were offering the advice or just there for me, but I just was so entrenched in wanting to be successful and really drive myself.
Yeah, and I think when some of these things happen, unfortunately, we can be the last person to notice.
Yeah, exactly. And also, like, I mean, with your personality, and depending on how you analyse and think, like, I'm quite introverted naturally, and I'm very analytical in my brain. So even though I was experiencing that massive brain fog, I was still kind of in my head, you know, trying to sort things out myself. And I sometimes, like, I found some of those emotions quite hard. And I always have found it quite hard to communicate when I'm not feeling so strong, or if I'm not feeling like myself, because I guess I've always been, in my life, I've always been someone who is the strong one, or relied upon and very reliable. So to kind of have that, I just didn't want to, I guess, give any ownership to that seed of doubt, so I just would bury it and bury it and bury it, which is not healthy. And I recognise that now, but that is my coping mechanism.
Yeah. And so people around you started to say that, look, things aren't good here. What helped you recover from this?
I think what really helped me recover was that with my husband, we had big dreams of having a big family, a big tribe. Like, we both come from families with, there's 5 children in each, and when, you know, we've been married for 11 years now, and when there was no children, I was like, well, maybe I should just get myself checked out. But it wasn't until I went to an endocrinologist in Auckland, and then I got some blood test results and I was officially diagnosed hemiathlete's triad, that I sort of thought, well, but that wasn't, like, the diagnosis wasn't it. It was the, I guess it was the impact on, you know, not being able to have family, because there's this seedy side, I guess, in health and fitness, where especially with females and competitors or whatever the realm is, like, the menstrual cycle for women, if you lose it, it's kind of this accolade of pride, like, that means that you're a certain amount of leanness, and that's desirable in aesthetics. So it wasn't really until I kind of had that conversation with the endocrinologist about the imbalance of my energy out, my energy in, my loss of cycle, or the potential that I've done some quite serious damage to my bone structure. And the huge ramification to me was, you know, no family, no children. That was when I was like, oh, you know, I sort of stopped, and that was the first moment I took a breath, I guess. And it was a small breath. It was very chest high. It wasn't very deep, but I was just like, well, this is quite serious.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, fertility is a huge sign of health, but in the fitness industry, that was perceived quite differently.
Yeah, it can be. It really can be. So, I mean, it's only now that there's some really good coaches and some really good people in the industry that are starting to work with a female cycle and embrace it as a strength and work on ovulation and maintaining a healthy and regular cycle with their athletes. But I don't know, I don't think it was ever spoken in and out there, but there's this understanding, like, if you've got an irregular cycle, or, you know, it's intermittent, or you lose it, but you don't really talk about it. It could be a Kiwi thing, I don't really know, so I obviously didn't talk about it. But it's also known that if you're losing your cycle, oh my gosh, you are lean, you know? There's like, you must be lean. So, you know, by lean, I mean, like, you're at a body fat, which is low enough that you kind of have that rich look, I guess, which is crazy when I say it out loud now. As a health professional, I'm just like, what was I thinking? But you can only look back in hindsight and be like, wow. And now, it's just when I hear myself say those things, I'm just like, I don't want anyone else to go through what I went through, not just for the health consequence, but the mental consequence as well. It was horrible.
And I'm sure there's some people listening to this that are thinking, either this is actually something that I might be going through, or I know someone in this space. What would your advice be to people that are in the thick of this?
Well, I think the first thing would be to, you know, like, well done on acknowledging that, because it's a hard thing to, you know, you never want to see the dark side in yourself. So well done on acknowledging that, and talk to someone, absolutely talk to someone. At least get used to communicating how you're feeling and what you're going through. And that can, you know, if it's someone that's close to you, that's awesome. But if you don't feel like you can talk to someone who's really close to you and relying on you, then do seek professional help. Like, you know, I did a lot of Google searching to find my endocrinologist, and I really liked her because she was, her name's Dr. Megan Ogilvie, by the way. She is someone who's highly involved in fertility as well. And I felt quite comfortable talking to her. And I had this other lady, Tanya, who's a coach and a Christian coach as well. So I felt, because I'm Christian, I felt like I could talk to her, and she had my faith and understood my life philosophies as well. Because, I mean, there was, you know, I put extra pressure on myself as well, that, you know, because I have all these life values in certain ways that I need to think, and a certain happiness that I'm associated with. So it was quite cool to be able to talk to someone who was neutral, understood your life values, but had no judgment associated with that.
It's excellent that you could find someone like that. And I suppose if people don't know where to go, they could go to someone like a GP as a start?
Absolutely, yeah. Definitely a GP is great. Especially if you've got a GP that you can openly talk to. With my experience, so my blood tests, what actually happened was a lot of them came back within the norm ranges. So with the medical profession, like, your blood tests, they're read and they're associated with a range that's kind of standardized amongst the set population. So all my blood tests were showing that I was normal. And that was kind of quite confusing because my symptoms and what I was presenting and how I was feeling was certainly not how I was used to feeling. So it's quite cool if you have a GP who can not only read and get the appropriate blood test you need, but also look at you as a whole person and holistically. So even though your blood might be saying, oh, well, you're within the norm, they might know you personally and go, okay, this is not like you. You know, there's got to be some underlying cause and refer you on to someone that might know a bit more about it if they don't know themselves. And I was really, really lucky that I had a GP that was quite open to that and recognised that I wasn't feeling myself, because I think the norm has been to, I guess, oh, well, you're feeling sad, here, go on these depression drugs. And it definitely isn't always the case. Like, you can feel terrible from a variety of cascading imbalances in your hormones. But it's having a GP that can look at the whole picture of you and what you're presenting, not just in terms of, I guess, the details of blood panels and information like that, but they can look at things like maybe your gut health or maybe how you're living, or and offer various solutions or have a variety of networks that they can refer to if they're unsure themselves.
Yeah. And we're almost out of time, but this is obviously quite personal, and when you started sharing this with other people, what sort of response did you get?
It was actually very supportive and surprised, and I was surprised by that. The thing, you know, no one likes to talk about skeletons in their own closet, and it's like, you know, like I've said, I don't often like communicating, and it's been my pattern of history my whole life. So I was really happy with the support, and what I was so happy with, once I started talking, there were so many people that resonated with things such as losing their cycle or feeling like I was feeling better in my industry. So I felt like I could really be there helping people. And if I wasn't the person that was going to stop, help them solve their own problem, then I could refer them on to people in their own country or their own city where they could find some help. And it was just such a relief, I guess. I felt light being able to lift this burden and talk about it. And I guess realizing that you're not alone is always, that's always a cool thing, to know that you're not the only one that's experiencing this. And they're like, you know, an experience shared or a kind of health condition shared allows you to sound out how you're feeling and maybe a better path to your own healing, which is fantastic.
Certainly, and having the bravery to speak up for that's really important. And if people want to get in touch with you, how can they contact you?
Oh, absolutely. So my email is nats@natslevy.com, or always through Facebook, just Nats Levy. I'm very creative with my Facebook names, and Instagram @natslevy. Just send me a message, or go onto my website natslevy.com and read a little bit more about my story, especially if there's something in there that resonates with you or someone that you know. Because it might not be you, but it might be your sister or your mother or auntie, your niece, friends. Like, you know, you can kind of start to see these trends and patterns. If you know someone who's really exercising a lot, maybe not in a grips of an eating disorder, but it has a pattern of disordered eating, and is just not themselves, then please do reach out to them and or read my story and get in touch with me. I can offer you some great connections and advice.
Fantastic. Well, thank you very much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Oh, whakatā lava, Michael. Thank you for talking to me.
When the nights get cold and the lights go out, the sun is gone behind the clouds, and you feel lost, and I'll reach out to guide you home.